Welcome to None of This Is Real,
the podcast for all things mysterious and weird.
I'm Doomsday Damini.
And I'm Sarah Z. Cole.
You're a little fairy goblin elf thing.
What? I'm a fae of some sort.
Well, I want to just quickly describe your outfit.
Oh, okay.
Just quickly to the people. You're all purple. You're a varying shades of mauve and purple.
Yes, a lot of purple, purple, pink, a little bit of blue.
We have blue lined wings. That's the only thing that's really blue. They're a little crooked, but that's because you're, you know, flying all over the place. And
I fly crooked all the time. It's the only way to fly.
You're flying crooked.
I don't know what that means.
You got these ears that are just like, they are going out farther than the wings almost because they're attached to your headphones.
Yes, I told you halfway through the look, I was like, oh no, the ears are quintessential and I have to wear headphones. I did not think this through. So I just attached the ears to them.
And then you got your good wig. Your good wig.
I got my good wig. Look, it's so long and I feel like Christina Aguilera.
It's luscious. It makes me want to dye my hair violet or lavender.
Isn't it beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
It's I love it. It's gorgeous. All right. Enough about me. Let's talk about weird and mysterious stuff.
Oh, y'all, this is a random weirdness episode. So we're going to tell you something weird, and then we're going to go.
I'm going to go wash my face and take this wig off. There's a lot of glitter.
I'm going to go dance my problems away after this.
I might do that as well.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to tell you something weird. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay. I was inspired to talk about this because my friend Jennifer sent me a Marco Polo, a video message, and it was just basically a dead crow and her yelling and then her feet running. And I was like, what? Is this the beginning of a horror movie? What is happening?
It sounds like it. Jennifer? Is that her name? Are you okay?
Yeah, Jen.
Jen, are you all right?
She's okay, but
okay.
I did talk to her after this.
But
okay. She was like, this is a crow funeral. It's a crow funeral. I'm seeing a crow funeral. And I was like, what are you talking? And it was just like her running outside and then her talking to a neighbor. And she was like, it's a crow funeral to her neighbor. And I just saw like the sidewalk and her feet.
I would be freaking out too, Jen. I get it, Jen. I would love to witness a crow funeral.
So shout out to Jen who saw a crow funeral. And now, so I'm going to tell you about crows and funerals and crow funerals and crow stuff.
Crows.
So my sources are Why Crows Hold Funerals by Mindy Weisberger. Do Crows Hold Funeral for Their Dead by Liz Langley. Flying In for the Crow Funeral by Anne Marshall Chalmers. And 12 Fascinating Facts About Crows by Mark Mancini. Okay.
All right.
Crows.
I'm so excited. I love crows.
As a fairy, you should really get along well with crows. I feel like they probably have
one would think.
A symbiotic relationship of some sort.
Of course.
Crows are widely recognized as highly intelligent. They can solve puzzles, learn how to use tools, and studies have shown that they can even hold grudges by remembering the faces of humans who have mistreated them.
Yes!
But I'm going to talk about why and how they have funerals for their dead.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So the sight of a dead crow tends to attract a mob of 100 or more live ones. They call to each other, gather around, and they pay special attention to their fallen comrade. And that's actually common among all highly intelligent corvids. So that is a group of birds that includes crows, jays, magpies, and ravens.
Yes.
So during the ritual, which this is so creepy. I would freak out if I saw it. During the ritual, the live crows almost, we're going to come back to
almost.
This, never touch the dead one, which rules out scavenging as a motive. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the birds are mourning their lost fellow crow. They may actually be trying to find out if there's a threat, where there's a threat, why this death occurred. so they can avoid
that
it.
That makes total sense. That makes total sense.
They may also be pissed because they hold grudges. So
that's true. Yeah. They're sending out their little crow CSI mm-hmm. team to check it out.
They're like, how dare you? You're on our shit list. Okay, so there is a, at the time of this article that I found, she was a PhD student named Kaylee Swift, but she's now a doctor. She has her doctorate and her- Dr. Swift, and it's K-A-E-L-I, I think I'm saying it correctly, but if you look her up, she has a whole website and her entire field, her whole study, like all her PhD work is dedicated to crows. And it's so cool.
Oh my God. She's probably, I need to talk to her.
Mm-hmm. So in a study published in the journal Animal Behavior, Dr. Swift found that American crows associate people seen handling dead crows with danger, and they will be wary of feeding near such people. So at the start of her wow. 2-year experiment, Swift put out food at over 100 sites in Washington state where breeding crows and nesting crows were common.
Okay.
So Swift then had about 25 volunteers wear masks, and she asked them to stand near the food for 30 minutes in a clear view of the crows. And the masks obscured the volunteers' facial expressions, and it allowed a rotating cast of volunteers to be involved.
That makes sense.
So they would stand near the food, and each volunteer was either holding a dead crow or standing near a dead red-tailed hawk, which is a crow predator, or standing near a dead red-tailed hawk and holding a dead crow.
Whoa.
Or they were an empty-handed control volunteer. So some people didn't hold anything. Right. And all of these dead birds they're holding were taxidermied birds who had already died. They were not, you know, actual carcasses.
Like, they were out there just killing birds to study birds. Right.
No, they did not do that. This was just... That's not the way. Okay.
No, that is not the way.
Almost universally, the crows responded to seeing the people and the dead birds, so the people holding the dead crows, by scolding or putting out an alert call to other crows. So the hawk and dead crow combination provoked the most reaction, and the crows did not react at all to the empty-handed control volunteer. So they were...
Okay.
Her... theories were correct about these crows.
Yep. Good job, Dr. Swift.
The volunteers to whom the crows reacted would return to the site periodically for 6 weeks, even though they went empty-handed. They came back time and time again with no more dead birds in their hands.
Okay.
Even so, the crows remembered their asses and continued to scold the people through the entire length of the experiment, and they were wary of the area for several days, suggesting that they consider these people a threat.
That is so fucking cool.
So in a second experiment, Swift also found the crows that had a much milder response. She found out they had a much milder response to a masked person holding a taxidermied pigeon. So this indicated that crows were more sensitive to their own kind, which makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
Now, remember how I said that crows hold grudges?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Other experiments have revealed that American crows never forget a human face.
Never.
So this man... John Marsluff and his team have imaged the brains of American crows and shown that the hippocampus, which is a part of the brain associated with learning and memory, is activated in a crow by the sight of a person holding a dead crow. And in his experiments, in one of his experiments that lasted for 9.5 years and counting, these crows would remember the faces of the people involved. So
for 9.5 years.
Yeah. They still have not forgotten.
Wild.
Which I'm like, how long do crows live?
Yeah, like is that another generation?
There's some research that indicates they might be able to tell other crows about you.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Remember when we did the episode about languages and
animal languages,
alphabets.
Yeah,
it makes sense. If you have a warning call, all you got to do is be like, "Hey, that's bad," and then the other crow goes, "Okay, that's bad.
Yep,
I got it.
Filed away.
Survival.
I'm gonna remember that forever." So in 2008, Marsalef had researchers in caveman masks capture crows, while there were others in a control mask who left them alone. Afterwards, the birds ignored the people in the control mask, but continued to scold and chase the people in the caveman mask, and they did it for years. Now, first of all, please imagine that you are coming across this experiment, like you're just taking a walk and you see these people in a field in and I saw one of these masks. It's like this whole face paper mache looking
I've read about this experiment before and I've seen that mask and it it's so definitely spooky.
do you know what the control mask is?
I don't know if I remember the control mask.
It's a Dick Cheney mask. So you're just walking along and you see a bunch of researchers and crows in a field and people with like caveman and Dick Cheney masks on. You gotta be freaked out.
I would think it was performance art, to be honest.
I mean, it could be. It could be both science and performance art.
It's tactical frivolity and science.
So here's a little more about the funerals to kind of tie this all up. All it takes is one dead American crow plus one fellow crow to spot the dead crow and release a harsh and urgent call. Within moments, a mob of crows or a murder of crows arrives.
Ooh.
Sometimes it's a handful. The thing I said before was it said it could be 100. This one said 60 to 70 birds. Either way, it's a lot of crows.
A lot of crows.
And they'll settle onto the branches or whatever they have to settle on so they can view the corpse and surround the scene. And then for a short time, all the birds remain quiet and still, only to break into a chorus of shrill calls. And they do this back and forth, silence and shrill calls.
Oh my gosh.
Alternating for about 15 to 20 minutes until all at once, they disperse.
Can you imagine? I need to see this happen. So crazy.
Maybe I could get Jen to send us something. Maybe she'll send us an email.
Send us an email, Jen. We went to the skate park last week and I watched about 7 or 8 crows harassing a hawk from tree to tree, like dive bombing it, surrounding it, screaming at it. And I was, I was just standing there like, oh, this is so cool.
It is cool to watch.
I'm observing animal behavior.
Let me get my field notes. Okay.
Dang it. I forgot my field notes.
So if that's not creepy enough, remember how I said that the living crows almost never touch the dead ones?
I do remember that. Yes.
As part of her many experiments related to crow funerals, Kaylee Swift would sometimes leave a taxidermied crow on the ground. And in one video, a pair of crows had sex with the dummy crow. So,
what?
Turns out it does happen.
Wait a minute.
It doesn't happen very often. She said it's like about 4% of the time it happened. But she says a necrophiliac three-way, happened only 4% of the time. And primarily only during early breeding season. But it happens.
Okay. 4% is a lot. Too much. It should be 0%. It's too many percentages.
So here's a quote. I'm almost done. Here's a quote from Dr. Swift. She says, I think the biggest takeaway for me is that they're really thinking about this stuff. It's not a super automatic basal brain behavior. It's something they are thinking through. It's just like...
All right. And for those 4% of crows, they really need to think harder. They're not thinking through what they're doing.
So to sum up, crows are smart and they're judging you. The end.
You know what? So is everybody else. Everybody else is judging me, too. So, fine. Why not the crows?
Don't piss them off. They'll scold you for the rest of your life, and then their offspring will never let you forget it.
Generations later, crows will still be laughing at your bad haircut or whatever.
That's why it's good to get on their good side. You can give them little shiny things.
Get another thing that I have in common with crows.
There you go.
Love of shiny things. Oh
my anyway.
Gosh. Wow.
So there you go.
Anyway.
Necrophiliac crow funerals.
You're
welcome.
Oh, God. Thank you. Thanks. I guess.
Tell me a weird thing.
Okay. I am going to tell you about four awards that you might not want to win.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And my only one source is the ever-present, always reliable
Wikipedia.
Oh my gosh.
Subtle.
Yeah. So, as always, per usual, subtlety is our middle name.
It's our brand.
Okay. It's our brand. Subtlety is my brand. Obviously, look at me. I have ears strapped onto my headphones. Clearly, I am a subtle person. Oh my God. Okay. First, I'm going to tell you about the Ig Nobel Prize. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's Nobel. It's like the Nobel. It's like the opposite of the Nobel Prize.
Oh, so
you
it's
call
like
it
the stupidest
Ig Nobel
thing prize?
Yes. Oh, it was organized in 1991 by the editor and co-founder of the Annals of Improbable Research and former editor-in-chief of the Journal of Irreproducible Results, Mark Abrahams. Okay. And he has been the MC for all of the awards. So it celebrates 10 unusual or trivial achievements in scientific research. And this is their mission statement, to honor achievements that first make people laugh and then make them think.
Oh.
And for discoveries, yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
For discoveries that cannot or should not be reproduced. And the categories are physics, chemistry, physiology, medicine, literature, and peace, but also sometimes public health, engineering, biology, you know, all kinds of different studies. So they do recognize genuine achievements, like real experiments, but there have been three prizes awarded to fictitious scientists. One was named Josiah Stinkney Carberry. And he is a fictional professor who was created as a joke in 1929. And his field of study is psychoceramics, which is the study of cracked pots.
Oh, I love it.
Mm-hmm. The second fake scientist was Paul DeFanti, and this was the area of pedestrian technology for his invention of the Bucky Bonnet, a geodesic fashion structure that pedestrians wear to protect their heads and preserve their composure.
I need that.
I need it, too. I think this is a great invention. I want one. And the third is Thomas Kyle, who discovered the element known as administratium, which is a parody of the bureaucracy of scientific establishments and the descriptions of newly discovered chemical elements.
All right.
So, I gotta love nerdy scientist jokes.
They're having fun.
I guess. They're having a lot of fun. Sometimes they are criticized for being satire, they are criticizing science as satire. So it's not always like, this was kind of useful. It's like, this is not anything. Two awards have been given to homeopathy prizes in science education to the Kansas State Department of Education and Colorado State Department of Education for their stance regarding teaching evolution.
Oh my God. So they're trolling people too.
They are sometimes trolling people, yes, which is good. I like that kind of trolling. So they want to draw attention to scientific articles that have humorous or unexpected aspects, such as the discovery that the presence of humans tends to sexually arouse ostriches.
Oh, alrighty.
Okay.
Noted.
The statement that black holes fulfill all the technical requirements for being the location of hell.
Could be.
Research on the 5-second rule is another one that they've given an
now
award
to. That's useful
to.
And practical.
That is useful. I agree. Sir Andre Gym was awarded a prize in 2000 for levitating a frog by magnetism.
Cool.
And was then later awarded an actual Nobel Prize in Physics 10 years later for his work in the electromagnetic properties of graphene. And he's the only person that's gotten an Ig Nobel and a Nobel Prize.
Ah! So, get you a scientist who can do both.
I like it. They have a lot of running jokes throughout the ceremony. There's someone named Miss Sweetie Poo. It's a little girl who yells out during the show, "Please stop, I'm bored," if somebody talks too long. And they close every ceremony with the words, "If you didn't win a prize, and especially if you did, better luck next year."
Can we go to the ceremony?
I would love to attend this.
Maybe we could do something dumb and submit it to the
for the prize. God, that would be so great. Let's research something ridiculous, please. That would be my dream. Okay, so even though it is a veiled criticism and a satire sometimes of trivial, something that could be trivial, sometimes this research has actually led to really big, important breakthroughs. Like in 2006, there was a study showing that one of the mosquitoes that carries malaria is just as attracted to the smell of Limburger cheese as they are to the smell of human feet. And they received the Ig Nobel Prize in the area of biology. But as a result of the findings of that study, they created traps baited with Limburger cheese, and that has helped combat the epidemic of malaria.
Dude, that's great. This summer, you know, I'm going to have a bunch of cheese traps on my porch.
What? Why do you have a bunch of jars of cheese?
Because they like to bite my feet. It's really annoying.
It's gross. Okay. Now I'm going to talk about one more. The Pigasus Award. And this was an award presented by my boy James Randi, professional skeptic and magician. And he sought to expose parapsychology and paranormal or psychic frauds. So this is a quote from James Randi. "The trophy consists of a stainless steel spoon bent in a pleasing curve, paranormally, of course, and supported by a base of plastic. Please note that the base is flimsy and quite transparent. I am personally responsible for the nomination of the candidates. The sealed envelopes are read by me, while blindfolded, at the official announcement ceremony on April 1st. Any baseless claims are rationalized in approved parapsychological fashion, and the result will be published immediately without being checked in any way. Winners are notified telepathically and are allowed to predict their victory in advance."
I want that one. Let me have it.
Isn't it great? So the bent spoon award is it used to be called the Uri Trophy, and that's after Uri Geller, who I don't know if you know, it was a magician I don't know what he would call himself, a psychic. I don't know. He claimed he could bend spoons.
Yeah.
And he and James Randi had like a lifelong feud. So, you can win the Pigasus Award in one of four categories. The scientist who said or did the silliest thing relating to parapsychology in the preceding 12 months. The funding organization that supports the most useless parapsychological study during the year. The media outlet that reported as fact the most outrageous paranormal claim. Or the, quote, psychic performer who fools the greatest number of people with the least effort in that 12-month period.
Oh my God.
So that's the Pigasus Award.
Love it.
I'm going to tell you real quick about an award that I wish still existed called the Golden Fleece Award. This award was presented from 1975 to 1988, and it was given to public officials in America for their squandering of public money.
Oh.
Don't you wish this came back? So this was started by a senator named William Proxmire, who was a Democrat from Wisconsin. He gave the award out monthly until he retired. So in total, he gave out 168 Golden Fleece Awards. And I'm going to tell you a couple of the award winners. So the Federal Aviation Administration spent $57,800 on a study of the physical measurements of 432 airline stewardesses that included the distance from knee to knee while sitting and the length of the buttocks.
What?
Yes.
That's dumb.
This happened. Yep. the National Institute on Drug Abuse funded a project by a psychologist called Harris Rubin for $121,000 to develop, quote, some objective evidence concerning marijuana's effect on sexual arousal by exposing groups of male pot smokers to pornographic films and measuring their response by means of sensors attached to their penises.
Wow.
So, good money spent on something anybody could have told you already. Thanks.
Yes.
The National Science Foundation spent $103,000 to compare aggressiveness in sunfish that drank tequila as opposed to gin.
Got it.
So they got fish drunk and spent over $100,000 on it. The National Institute for Mental Health, which spent $97,000 to study what went on in a Peruvian brothel. The researchers said they made repeated visits in the interest of accuracy.
Hmm. Sure.
So that's cool. The Office of Education spent $219,592 to teach college students how to watch television.
I think they know.
I don't understand that one. I didn't go any deeper because I could have talked about this one for hours. The Department of the Army had a 1981 study on how to buy Worcestershire sauce. Worcestershire. That stuff. Okay, and one more real quick, a prize. This is I don't have a favorite, really, I guess. The bookseller / diagram prize for the oddest title of the year. And so, obviously, this is an award given to a book with a really weird title. Okay. I'm going to try to read these without laughing too hard. But there was a controversial winner for a book called The 2009 to 2014 World Outlook for 60 Milligram Containers of Fromage Frais. It was written by an author named Philip M. Parker. And the reason that it was controversial is because it was actually written by a machine that Parker invented. It wasn't really written by a person, So they were mad about that. The winner of this year's prize, the most recent one, was in November of 2020. This book was called A Dog Pissing at the Edge of a Path, Animal Metaphors in Eastern Indonesian Society by Gregory Forth.
I like it. I want to read it.
It's so good. And I'm going to read you. I got a list of other ones, and then I'm going to go wash my glitter off.
Okay.
Here's some other winners throughout the years. Proceedings of the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice. Whatever the fuck that means. The Book of Marmalade, its antecedents, its history, and its role in the world today.
Wow. Fascinating.
Natural bust enlargement with total power. How to increase the other 90% of your mind to increase the size of your breasts.
Okay.
I'm good. I don't want to do that. Oral sadism and the vegetarian personality.
What?
I don't know.
Okay.
How to Shit in the Woods, an Environmentally Sound Approach to a Lost Art.
I love shitting in the woods.
You and I have had...
We've had some good old times.
We'll talk about that on it. That's another weird topic. Oh my God. Okay. Butterworth's Corporate Manslaughter Service. The Big Book of Lesbian Horse Stories.
Aw, sweet.
Bomb-proof your horse.
Bomb-proof your horse.
A lot of horse-centric titles here. People who don't know they're dead, how they attach themselves to unsuspecting bystanders, and what to do about it.
Uh-oh.
This one's pretty bad. This one might make you mad. If you want closure in your relationship, start with your legs.
Ew, get out of here. My legs are open, baby!
Open for business. Goblin-proofing one's chicken coop.
Oh, helpful. I was gonna look that up later.
Yeah, it's a good one. I read the whole thing already. How to poo on a date.
That's really actually practical advice.
Yeah, some of these, the poo ones, probably should read both of those, although I don't really go on dates anymore. The dirt hole and its variations.
Uh-huh.
And there's more. I could keep going, but just go look at the Wikipedia entry. You could read the rest of them.
My goodness.
Those are the ones I chose. So
that sounds fun. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go write some books.
We need to write books. We need to do some experiments. We need to waste some government money.
Let's write a book about a crow experiment.
Sorry, Dr. Swift.
We're going to put wigs. We're going to put all your wigs on the crows and see.
Okay, we're going to put wigs on crows. We're going to claim that makes them psychic. We're going to write a book about it.
Get ready. 2021. I'm here excited. We come. Oh, this is our first episode of the year, y'all. You're welcome.
It is. You're so welcome. We've already made so many big plans. We've got a lot of stuff to work on.
Yes, we do. And this
We got to find some crows. Oh, I'm excited.
And we have to see each other in person. That's
We definitely have to do that. We'll do that when we apply for the government grants to study crow wigs.
For sure. Crow wigs. Y'all.
We have to go.
Go follow us on all the things. We're on Instagram and
yep. Do that.
TikTok and Patreon if you want to support us and get some weird gifts.
Yeah. Redbubble.
And some merch.
Email us all your secrets.
Please. If you've ever seen a crow funeral or written a
please
book
tell us.
With a weird title or anything at all. Please.
Have you ever won a really embarrassing award? Please.
Please email us at noneofthisisrealpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Michaela DeLeon and Gil Davis, for our spooky, beautiful theme song.
Thank you so much. We love it. And the only other thing I wish to tell you right now is that you don't have to believe any of the stuff we just said.
No, you don't. But you do. Absolutely do have to believe on yourself.
Oh, believe all over yourself. Like a wig on a crow.
Like a wig on a crow. Oh, damn, you look good. Okay. Love you, bye! Oh, God!
Bye.
End like that?
Oh, let's listen to it.
Yeah.